Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joining the studio back from his vacation. Shaka Hislop is here. And continuing to brag, since that final whistle went in Madrid, Stevie the fortune teller Nickel is with us as well. More on that game, by the way, with Jules and Gemma a little later on in the show. But we kick things off in the Premier League. Number of matches today, including Chelsea's 3-1 victory away against Norwich City. Two early goals were enough, really, to see the job done for Thomas Tuchel's side. But, of course, the big story coming out of Chelsea are those sanctions exercised towards Roman Abramovich, which have huge effects on the future of the club. This is what he can do. Continue to play what Chelsea can do. Continue to play matches. Receive broadcast money. Allow season ticket holders to attend games. The club cannot buy new players, agree new contracts, sell new tickets for games, sell club shop merchandise, or sell the club unless Abramovich allows the UK government to take control of the process and he receives no proceeds from the sale. Here to break down the significance of all of this, we welcome in Gab Marcotti and Mark Ogden. Mark, this is a huge story, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it caught everybody by surprise this morning when it broke that Abramovich was going to be sanctioned. I think it was always a possibility, but the speed of it was just, it was took everyone's breath away, really. And I think even now, you know, 12, 24 hours later, we're still trying to sift through the actual detail of it. But you're right, there are things in there that they can't spend more than £20,000 on an away trip. So that means that the whole squad of 20, 25 players plus staff, £20,000 to cover travel, accommodation, for instance, when they go to Lille in the Champions League next week. I think there might be a way around that. That just shows you how punishing these sanctions are. The club shop can't sell merchandise, as you say. I do think, though, that this will be a short-term pain for Chelsea in the sense that this is, you know, they can't buy and sell players. Well, the Toronto window's closed anyway, so it'll open again in June. Hopefully, for Chelsea's sake, by then they'll have a new owner. And if they have a new owner, I'd imagine the slate will be wiped clean in terms of the sanctions. They can move on again. So it's bad right now, very bad for Chelsea right now. But as we've seen in the past, I was thinking Liverpool in 2010 when they were sold on the brink of bankruptcy. They were sold to FSG. And look at Liverpool now. So it isn't the end of the world for Chelsea. It's a new world for Chelsea. But I don't think it's as dramatic as it could have been. But right now, in the heart of the action, it's bad.
How does this affect the sale of the club, Gab?
Well, the UK government has said that they're going to take control of the process. I'm assuming there's going to be a fair amount of negotiation, certainly from the perspective of the government and in terms of PR, because let's not forget, Chelsea fans vote as well. Chelsea is a UK business, which employs hundreds and hundreds of taxpayers here in the UK. What they want is simply to get Roman Abramovich out and get somebody else in. I think it's also notable that those sanctions that you mentioned, they expire on May 31st. They can be extended, of course. They can also be removed by the government at any time. So I don't think we should think this as a super long-term thing. Certainly, if I'm buying the club, I would also have to ask myself, okay, if you're Roman Abramovich, what do you want now? Because if the government's indicated they don't want him to get any money, the assets are frozen out of it. I would presume that for Abramovich to agree to a sale, they can't just take the club away from him. So for him to agree to a sale, he's going to want some sort of safeguard so that one day when the assets are unfrozen, he gets some money out. Otherwise, he really has zero incentive other than his love for Chelsea to agree to anything. And that would mean walking away from the $1.5 billion that the club owe him. So I do think the club will be sold, but I do think there's going to be a ton of negotiations, a ton of lawyers. I also wouldn't rule out some sort of legal challenge against this actions by the government in terms of the scope of the sanctions imposed.
You mentioned before, Mark, the travel restrictions, obviously eyes on the Champions League. How are they going to get around that?
Well, Chelsea saying that everything, certainly for Lille, next week has been paid up front, so that isn't a problem. But the problem will start if Chelsea get through the 2-0 from the first leg. So if Chelsea get through, for instance, they draw Real Madrid, how do they get to Real Madrid, to Madrid, for maybe a one or two night stay and cover that for £20,000? That will be the difficulty. How do they get there? How do they pay for the flight? How do they pay for the accommodation? Well, so they are speaking at the government to try and negotiate a bit more flexibility on that. But these are kind of punishing sanctions, and you know, people outside of football will say, well, tough, you know, you're a football team, you're not a special case, but they are being treated as a special case because the government regards them as a cultural kind of a valuable cultural asset to the country.
Gap?
I think the government, when they took this, because obviously there's also limitations on as you mentioned, on the sale of tickets going forward and merchandise sold in the club shop. I'm purely speculating here, but I'm fairly certain that they had a word with Chelsea beforehand and they saw how much money was left in their accounts to make sure that if, you know, they were only freezing enough money that it would hurt the club and obviously draw a lot of attention, but would allow them to operate until the end of the season. You know, £20,000 sounds like a figure, frankly, plucked out of thin air. You know, depending who you go and play, that could be a lot of money, that could be a little bit of money. And that's just one example. So I think the government's intention is to make sure that Chelsea get through, keep operating long enough, that there's enough cash there. And I think they're pretty confident that there is. Even this thing with the travel, £20,000, it's not like they're going to go and fly in a budget airline. You know, worse comes to worse, you ask the players to kick in some money, and it's in their interest to do so because the further they go, the more prize money they get, and the players want to win as well. So I wouldn't go overboard and focus too much on this £20,000 thing.
How much ramifications does this have, big picture, for the Premier League, Mark?
Well, for the Premier League, it's obviously not great reputationally for the Premier League. They'll be keeping a very watchful eye on who it tops the bidding list for Chelsea, who may become the new owner, because that is their concern now, that they, whoever it is, passes the fit and proper persons test, or however they call it these days. That they want, Chelsea is one of their biggest clubs, one of their biggest brands, so they need Chelsea to be run with a stable ownership and back to, you know, what we know Chelsea to be. But they'll never be Chelsea that we know them to be again, because Roman Abramovich is leaving, not by choice, and he's put a lot of money in over the years and he's really subsidised Chelsea. So we're looking at one of their biggest, most powerful clubs not being as powerful anymore. I don't see whoever comes in will make them as powerful as Abramovich did. So it's a big thing for the Premier League, but their hands are really tied on this. It's up to the government now what happens really with Chelsea. And there are implications in terms of players. You know, they can't sign players, which, as Gab said, this expires on the 31st of May. It's issues like they can't give new contracts. So Antonio Rudiger is out of contract in the summer. Aspilicueta out of contract in the summer. Christensen. So they've got three key players there that can't get new contracts, so will automatically leave as free agents. So that has implications. But beyond that, I think it is definitely primarily a Chelsea issue right now, but the Premier League will be very concerned that, you know, the government don't just make it a sale to the highest bidder, because if that's the case, then it could take weeks and months to sort out the suitable nature of the new owner.
Last word on this to you, Gab.
Yeah, I think it's in the Premier League's interest to have another strong London club like Chelsea. So they're going to pay attention to the new owner. I had to giggle a little when Mark mentioned the owners and directors test, because obviously we've seen that in the past, the attitude of the Premier League was, we really don't care who buys these clubs as long as they stump up the cash. And even when they wanted to create obstacles, as we saw with the purchase of Newcastle, then the British courts said, oh no, look, you know, PIF and Mohammed bin Salman are different people, they're different entities. In the end, I think a lot of this is going to be decided by politicians and what the current political mood is. And I think that's going to be the real thing that's going to determine what Chelsea can do in the summer. As of right now, if, you know, between now and May 31st or July 1st, perhaps more accurately, when the transfer window opens, we have, what, three and a half months to go, a little more than that. I think that is enough time to complete a sale. Abramovich doesn't have a lot of cards to play at this point. And I think, you know, going into the summer, I think Chelsea are going to be okay. I don't see it's in anybody's interest to damage Chelsea, the football club, any further at this stage.
Gab Marcotti and Mark Ogden, thank you very much for a lot more on this. Be sure to keep an eye over on our YouTube channels. We'll be keeping you up to date with everything as and when it breaks. Don't forget to subscribe to ESPN FC.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Front page of Marker, reflecting on Real Madrid's extraordinary comeback last night against PSG. This is Madrid. Meanwhile, L'Equipe going with Punished by the King. What a great headline that is with Benzema's hat-trick. Sport just go with knockouts. I don't think anyone, surely, could have predicted what happened last night.
You know, this PSG side, they're a bunch of ball merchants. I mean, they've basically bottled it most of the time.
Wow.
So, I'm going to go with Real Madrid.
How can they be bottle merchants when you've got the likes
PSG?
Of Lionel Messi in the side,
Neymar in the side,
Kylian Mbappe?
Do you want to go back? Year after year of all the things, and then you're going to throw Messi at me? Hold on a second. Was Messi not playing for Barcelona when they got Müller against Liverpool at Anfield? So, I mean, seriously.
Yes, but, yeah. But you can also put all the Champions Leagues that he's won.
But it's away from home. It's in Madrid, the same as Barcelona away from home in Anfield, and Messi did absolutely nothing in that game.
Right, well, he scored a hat-trick in the first leg of that game, didn't he?
He's been part of bottling it. PSG have bottled it in the Champions League so far, pretty much every time.
I don't think you can sell Lionel Messi, one of the greatest players ever, as a bottler.
He was part of a team that bottled it. Bottle it, Real Madrid.
Right, PSG are going to bottle
it. Wait, I better be on the show. Oh, I'm not.
You're not?
Oh,
what a shame.
Sorry, he'll do.
Sorry for doubting you, Stephen.
Yeah. I've not forgotten it yet.
Yeah. Thank you for the phone call during the match at the full-time whistle throughout the evening. Yeah.
He was the first person. Surprise.
Gemma Soler is here to give us a Spanish view on what happened, but we've got to start, haven't we? With our one and only Julian Laurent. Jules, the excitement that people have knowing that you're going to be on this show.
The excitement we have.
They just want to watch your man cry, basically. And not only, of course, did you have to witness it, you were there. You were at the game for it.
Yeah, that's right. I was covering it for ESPN, wrote my piece afterwards, praising Karim Benzema, of course, and destroying Mauricio Pochettino and PSG for another failure, because this is as much a failure from PSG than it is a success for Karim Benzema, all his genius, and Real Madrid, really, because PSG shoot themselves in the foot once again. They threw it away once again. And like Stevie said, they bottled it once again.
Who do you blame, Jules?
I blame the club to start with, the hierarchy of the club. I blame how dysfunctional this club is and how I think in the last few years especially, they've forgotten about the pitch and instead focused far too much on the marketing side of things. I blame Mauricio Pochettino, who I think made the wrong calls, taking out Paredes, leaving Neymar the whole game. I mean, how can Neymar play the whole 90 minutes when he was so inefficient, so, apart from the assist, I guess, but the rest was so bad. I blame the leaders or lack of leaders in that team, Marquinhos, Kimpembe, Verratti, Messi. The only one really is Mbappe that has to be out of any criticism, really. And then, you know, and then I blame the lack of mental strength, the mentality that this team has. The mindset is wrong. There's something psychologically wrong, and that goes deeper than just the coach or the players, because coaches go and they're sacked and they're hired, players come and go, but a lot of things don't change at that football club, and until that change, those deep issues, they're never going to get anywhere.
We've done this show for a long time, and it is a cliche where you think you've seen it all, but that capitulation in that 17-minute period where Benzema got the hat-trick, I don't think we've seen something quite to that extreme, have we? In the sense that they collapsed. They just looked like they couldn't even kick a ball.
They collapsed, and at a time when you are looking for leadership, when you look at the names on that PSG team sheet and you recognise the talent that they had to call, that they could call on off the bench, and yet nobody looked like they knew how to handle that situation. And for me, as much as TV called it right, I think what you saw over the course of the 90 minutes was an arrogance about who PSG are, about a belief that they are entitled to some kind of a result because of those same names, because of how much they get paid. Even before the collapse, in the first half, Marquinhos tried this odd back heels. Yeah. You are one up in a Champions League tie against a team that have branded themselves as the Champions League kings. And you can only throw it away. And you try this really odd back heel thing that I don't know what you achieve out of it. You get away with that. And then the opening goal. I asked, at this point, you're two up. And you are cruising. And speaking to Stevie today, I asked, whatever happened to just kicking the ball in the stands? You can only shoot yourself in the foot at this point.
Yeah.
You can only lose the game at this point. What is the benefit to Donnarumma controlling the ball, opening his body up, and trying to play it out to the right back? What does PSG gain from that? With nothing to gain and everything to lose, why not just put the ball in the stand? And again, that spoke to an arrogance about PSG that Real Madrid were only too happy to take advantage of.
It's embarrassing, wasn't it, Stevie?
Yeah. Yes.
It's the culture.
I'm
with Jules, you know. Right from the get-go, it was all about stardom and fame and all the stories over the last few years about players bypassing the manager, going up the stairs, speaking to people up there. It's the whole culture. And it always ends up showing its ugly face on the field of play. And part of the reason why I thought they would lose is because you knew that there were going to be times in this game where they were going to be under pressure. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember ever seeing this team over the last 2, 3, 4 years, whenever they're under pressure, they don't get together. Mm. They don't come together. They still, it's about me, me, me. And so, when the culture's like that and the pressure's on, that's why you see the collapse.
Gemma, of course, you were at the game as well. What can you tell us about these reports of a fight between Neymar and Donnarumma?
Well, these reports exactly, we couldn't confirm them because this was inside the locker room and they have denied it. So it's, of course, a rumor and we couldn't confirm. What I can confirm is that there was an ugly incident in the VIP area where the president sits. The president of PSG, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, was really upset. He started kicking doors and everything. He was really upset. He was shouting. He went downstairs to the... He was trying to look for the referees. He couldn't. He get into the room by mistake of the delegate of Real Madrid. There was a worker from the club who were recording. He had pictures. Leonardo threatened him, said that he will kill him if he didn't stop recording. Real Madrid has these tapes. And all the incidents, we have a very reliable source, because a colleague of mine, Monica Marchante, she's the journalist of Movistar, and they have a position there to do interviews to the president, so she saw absolutely everything. So this is very confirmed. The incident, that fight that apparently Neymar told Donnarumma, hey, you failed in the goal, and then Donnarumma went back and said, you failed in that chance. Both they said it's a lie, so we can't. I couldn't be in the locker room, but I was pitch side. I was in that game. It was an amazing night. The energy, the thrill, it had everything. They say before that game it was the game of the year. It certainly was. And it gave me back to memories of 5 years and 2 days ago. The most amazing thing I lived in a football pitch was that 6-1 Barcelona against PSG. Yesterday, I lived something very similar. I think it went through the team who believed the most. They always believed it, even they were one goal down, and they were resilient. They were a team. And yeah, we have to admit that Real Madrid, they were holding during 150 minutes during that time. They played only 30 minutes, but it was good enough for them.
Can I just say, I would be disappointed if there wasn't a fight in the dressing room. And I know, given the nature of the game today and the way it's covered, this is a big story, especially given the personalities we're talking about here. But in my day, if you were on a team that collapsed in that manner, in that stage, with everything at stake, and there wasn't some very harsh home truths told in that dressing room, I would think that PSG have an even bigger problem than that last half an hour would suggest. The only thing for me now, the concerning thing for me is that it had to happen in the dressing room. That nobody was prepared to tell those same home truths on the field. And while I don't presume to speak for Stevie, I would guarantee you that if Liverpool of his day were two up in a Champions League tie, gave away a cheap goal, somebody on the field would be letting their feelings be known. And the only difference, and I just wonder if it's the way the game is covered now, that when people speak to each other in this manner on the field as publicly as it is, every camera catches it and it's spun into all kinds of different things with voiceovers on TV shows. So now I don't know if players are afraid to speak to each other that way on the field. But in my day, and I am sure Stevie played in far more successful teams than I did, but there is absolutely no way you would be on the field, witness that happen, and everybody just kind of accept it and wait till the dressing room to discuss it.
Jules?
Yeah, I think there's a problem of leadership, certainly on that pitch. It was funny because as soon as the game finished, I was out with the other French journalists, and I said, as soon as they will open their mouth, Pochettino, Leonardo, Nasser, Marquinhos, the players, whoever is going to come to talk, they will say, oh, but the referee made a mistake on that first goal. It was a foul by Benzema. And this is going to be the excuse. Because that's every time. It's always someone else's mistakes. It's never their fault. It's always someone else's fault. And that's exactly what happened. They came out, all of them, saying, oh, the turning point is the first goal. It was a foul. It's a disgrace. Should have never... But the problem is not that goal. The problem is far deeper than that goal. This is an excuse that every time they found, instead of looking at themselves and what went wrong, what they did wrong and why it's not working, because it's quite obvious that it's not working, they always try to find the responsibility on somebody else. And that's a big part of the problem as well. Apart from that, everything that the guys have said is true. I would only say that being at the stadium, the Bernabeu was asleep before that first goal. There was nothing. Real Madrid were not playing well. PSG had the game under control. And that mistake by Donnarumma created, the stadium erupted, and after that, yeah, there was nowhere back. But until that point, there was only one team on the pitch, and it should have stayed that way.
Looking ahead, big picture, Jules, what does this mean for Kylian Mbappe?
It means that if he had even a little doubt in his mind about staying in Paris or going to Madrid, surely now there's no doubt. Why would he stay? Why would he stay in a club like this, in a dressing room like this, where no one is taking responsibility, where there's no leadership? This is not what he wants. This is, I mean, what more could he have done yesterday and in the first leg? Nothing. I mean, he's an incredible player. He doesn't deserve PSG. He's too good now. They've let him down. They've really let him down. And I think there's only one way now this is going to go. He's going to go to Real Madrid. He's going to announce his decision soon now. I expect him to. And surely the decision will be for him to go now. I think the only way it could have had PSG was they would have gone to the Bernabeu and win in style, dominating. And then they could have said to him, look, why don't you stay another year? Look at what we have compared to what they have, for example. Instead, we saw what we saw. And as you know, as much as he was Karim Benzema's knight, of course, and he was the hero. And I, as I wrote on the website, when we thought we had a new prince, he's the old king that reminded us all that he was still the boss. For Kylian Mbappe, I think this is the night that shows what he has to do now, which is leave the club.
Jules, you made the point, obviously, Neymar clearly not 100% fit, but still, he just looked an absolute shadow of the sort of player that we expect him to be in these big games. What does the future hold for him?
4 more years.
Wow.
4 more years on his contract. It's as simple as this. Who is going to pay 40 million a year in salary plus a transfer fee, or even if he's on a free? No one. His contract is until 2025 with a year extra in option that he can pretty much trigger himself. So 2026, 4 more years of what we saw on Wednesday night at the Bernabeu. 4 more years of a player that, okay, maybe he's not completely match fit, but clearly has lost at the age of 30 what made him so good in previous years, that acceleration, the skills on the first 5 to 10 yards. This is gone. This is gone. And you know what? I think he should drop a bit deeper, play as an eight, run a bit around, but stop trying to think that he can still drill past 2 or 3 defenders, because that's not going to happen anymore. So what's the future for Neymar is 4 more years in Paris, because I cannot see anyone taking him off their books.
I'll tell you what's in his future. Another documentary.
Chaka, you featured heavily.
That's the amazing thing for me. And again, it's a criticism around today's football and today's footballers. Let your speaker do all your talking on the pitch. Criticism is part of the job. It is par for the course. Accepting it, rolling with the punches is what makes the great players who they are. Lionel Messi, for as great as he is, has been criticized from the moment he stepped on a pitch, yet never felt the need to respond in any other way but on the pitch. And that is the infuriating thing about Neymar for me, that he feels he has to answer, that he feels he's exempt from criticism. And if you are, then he's... There has to be some kind of a retribution.
Right.
When there's only one channel for that. And now, again, especially on the back of that, the same old questions come up. Whatever he tried to address in that documentary is now null and void. It's back there for everybody. The wounds are open, and he has to answer them yet again. And on the surface of that performance, the only way he can answer those criticisms is by funding another documentary.
He's turned into a show pony.
It's ridiculous.
He's turned into a circus act. When was the last time we spoke about Neymar in terms of what he did on the field that was good? We certainly had plenty of chance to criticise him. When was the last time we said anything good about this guy? Joe said he lost his edge. His head's gone. You know, the thing that made him so good is why people like Ronaldo and Messi were so good for so long, is because every single day was another chance to play professional football. It goes back to all the things when you're young and the reason you play. He's forgotten all of that stuff. He's more interested in the dough. He's more interested in going and inviting Jules and all his other mates to all the parties. He's a complete circus act now. He's not a footballer.
Here's the funny thing for me. Of all my criticism around Neymar, the clip that they choose in that documentary is me seeing that Neymar has a greater responsibility than just to himself. That is the egregious part. That Neymar has a responsibility to a team. more so than to himself. That is the, whoever produced that, that is the clip they pick out. And I think that spoke volumes about him and quite possibly how he sees his role in football.
As much as we pile on Neymar, you look at Messi for that last 30 minutes, Jules, and he was a ghost.
It was, I mean, I looked at him after the first goal and after the second goal and after the third goal, and all I saw is him looking down, head down. And maybe he's not a vocal leader, we know that. It was maybe in his last season at Barcelona, maybe the last 18 months, where he seemed to be a bit more vocal, but that's not who he is. Okay, no problem. There's other ways of showing leadership than shouting at his teammates and trying to gather everybody around and say, come on, let's switch back on and let's see this game out, let's grind out a result. There's other ways. And even those ways, even the technical way, he didn't do it. I don't know if he was shocked like a lot of people, like if he was frozen like Pochettino on the touchline, not able to do anything. But I'm sorry, it's not good enough. It's just not good enough. And it's not only on him. But again, he's the most experienced player. He's one of the GOATs. He's one of the greatest ever. And I didn't expect him to put his head down and that's it. And, you know, this is a player that has been struggling at times this season, whether because he didn't want to or because he could not anymore. It's someone talking about ages who, again, is not where he was even a year ago. So this is difficult for everyone, but certainly the fact that he completely disappeared, disintegrated in the last half hour was quite incredible to witness.
How do you explain it, Stevie?
Messi, just getting old. It's just as simple as that. He's getting old. And when you're getting old, you're the last one, number one, to figure it out. But you keep kidding yourself on that the next time you do something, it's going to be what you used to do. But it doesn't work that way.
But still, surely his influence can be more than it was. As Jules said, you can lift your head, you can get involved, you can try and get this team going again because you're Messi, because of what you've achieved, because people look up to you the way they do.
Well, I don't... This might seem a little harsh, but you know what it is? See that little thing in there that beats away? That's what it boils down to. When things get hard, who's got the heart for it? And as Joe said, one of the greatest players that's ever kicked a ball put his head down.
Right.
Does that mean he's lost his appetite for the game? Maybe he has.
I think one of the things with great players when they get old, and Messi's not the first great player to play past their prime and into decline, but I think the difference is who you put around those players and how they're utilised in recognising that they're on the decline and sticking, well, less so Mbappe, but more to the point of Neymar, does not make up for Lionel Messi's decline. It highlights it, and that's what you've seen.
Gemma, what's ever been the reaction in Spain, particularly to Messi?
Well, we've seen that Messi. I know that Messi. I've been seeing that Messi for the last 4 years when things were going wrong. Messi has never been a shouting leader, never. This was one of the big problems of Barcelona. When Carles Puyol and Xavi left, there was not a shouting leader that when the things go ugly, they can shout and make the team shake and have a reaction. Don't expect that, Julian, of Messi, because he has never, ever, not ever when he was at his best, this kind of player. So the reaction in Spain, Spain is all about Benzema, Courtois, Modric, and the Real Madrid. But in Barcelona, Joan Laporta, he's getting a little bit of recognition of maybe what he did, because there was no way to keep that player being paid so much to make a renewal to the team. So at some point they say, okay, maybe it was the time to say goodbye to Lionel Messi, because we have been seeing this Lionel Messi looking down at the pitch at when things go ugly.
Jules, what the heck are PSG going to do? Mbappe's going to leave. Pochettino's going to leave. I know that's not really a big deal considering the lack of input or lack of influence he's had. But you start with Neymar. You start with Messi up top. You're trying to get someone like Zidane in. Does he really want the job? The project's done, isn't it?
It's not done, I think. But the next moves now are going to be crucial. they are going to be crucial. We know already that the ownership in Doha is not happy. I think Nasser Al-Khelaifi could go. I think he should go. I think he's, you know, when we talked about like things in common with all those failures, the Barcelona one, the Manchester United one in Paris, even the Chelsea one, Nasser Al-Khelaifi was the chairman in all those times. He was there. And I think the mindset of the club that we've been mentioning, the direction the club has been taken, this is all also his. And I think for me, he has to pay the price now. Same with Leonardo, who is clearly, I mean, let alone the attitude after the defeat on Wednesday night and what happened with in the tunnels and the referee dressing room and all of that. But I think they've had their time. They've had a chance for Leonardo twice even, because he was there, left, came back. I'm sorry, but now it's time for something new. And in terms of manager, someone who can bring an identity to this team, someone who is not scared not to play Neymar. The only reason why I think Pochettino keeps Neymar on that pitch for 90 minutes, which is a crazy thing, is because he must be scared somehow of taking him off. Otherwise, Pochettino is an intelligent guy. There's no way he's seeing the same game as us. There's no way he's thinking, yeah, I'm going to keep Neymar. He's amazing tonight. He's going to win me that game. He's going to turn things around. So was he scared to take him off? Is he not allowed to take him off? I don't know. But whoever comes next has to have more freedom of doing what he wants and be ready to take the big calls. Drop Messi, drop Neymar, drop Marquinhos if he's not good. All those players with status at the club should not have those status. And the next manager, whether it's Zidane or Stevie Nicola or whoever else they want to pick, will have to be able to make those decisions.
Stevie just played the clip of him calling them all bottlers. Go out there and prove me wrong. Right, Gemma, let's talk about the team that advanced, shall we? An extraordinary night at the Santiago Bernabeu, which of course bore witness to many big European wins during their history. This up there with one of the greatest. And Karim Benzema now very much in the conversation, Gemma, as being one of their best ever players.
Yes, of course he is, because he's a super loved character, because when he first arrived, he struggled a little bit in the Primera División, but he was always happy to take a second role. He was the best assistant for Cristiano Ronaldo. And then when Cristiano left by surprise, he was humble enough to step as a killer, but always being generous with the rest of the forwards he played with. So he's one of the favorites of President Florentino Perez, and he's feeling super confident right now, and he's the leader of this team. And yesterday, the communion he had with the supporters, I mean, Julian is right. There was some minutes that was a museum. You could only listen to the PSG stands shouting, but they believed. And I think Karim Benzema did a lot, and we saw it done, you and me live, when they won the Real Sociedad game. We were talking live in the post game. They did something they never do. They came out from the locker room just before the shower, and they went to the stands where the more ultra fans are in the Fondo Sur, and they were clapping at him, and they were like asking for help. That is a big communion now with that area of the Bernabeu and the players. And Karim Benzema is the absolute leader. He's the top goal scorer, and he's in amazing form, and he's doing so much for Real Madrid. I think it has three keys now, Carlo Ancelotti. It's Karim Benzema, Luka Modric, and Thibaut Courtois.
This kind of evolution of Benzema has been quite something to witness, Jules. I'm thinking about Jose Mourinho when he's there. He said he doesn't need a cat like Benzema. He wants a dog. He wants a killer. Boy, he's just really proved all these critics wrong. Not just this season, but time and time again.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, for me, he's an absolute genius. He was a genius at 16 and 17 when he made his debut for Lyon. And after that, I think there was a time where people didn't really understand his game and what he was about. When Cristiano was there, he was, like Gemma rightly said, he was at the service. And he said it to the interview that we did back in October. He said it. He said, well, when you play with one of the greatest, why would not you be at his service when you know he's going to make your team win? And then the stats that we just showed, that graphic for the last 4 years, well, that's the 4 years where Cristiano left. And then in that, in when Cristiano went, then he had to step up and show that he could be the leader and could take the follow of Cristiano, and he did. And what he's been doing is incredible. I mean, again, he was his knight. He's the first ever French player to score 3 hat-tricks in the Champions League. He's now overtaken Alfredo Di Stefano as the third best goal scorer in the history of Real Madrid. He's only behind Messi, Ronaldo and Lewandowski in the Champions League top scorers. It's incredible what he's been doing, the consistency over the last 11 years or 12 years. He's 34 years old, turned 34 in December, and he's never been this strong. And he's one of the best players in the world. It's an incredible story, really. And we go back to all the talk about Kylian and Kylian this and Kylian that, and he's the next one, okay, but I think Benzema showed that he's still the best for a few more months.
Benzema, 34, 2 years the junior, of course, of Luka Modric. How cool is Modric?
Goodness me. Let me tell you something. Every time, and I'm guilty of it, you write Luka Modric off. You write that entire Real Madrid midfield off. You think they're too old, they're a little too long in the tooth, people just have too much legs for them now. But Luka Modric just continues to astound in ways that you may not expect, or maybe he shouldn't be allowed to. We know what Luka Modric is good at. What we didn't expect is Luka Modric to pick a ball up 5 yards outside his own box, run the length of the field, and a couple passes later, find an assist for Karim Benzema.
And a world-class assist.
Unbelievable. To see Luka Modric running 30 yards, 3 players trailing in his wake, including Neymar, is something I thought we would not, or we'd see the last of 4 or 5 years ago. And yet still, for all the criticism around the individuals in this Real Madrid side, everything that was asked of them, they delivered. Turn the clock back, they all managed to turn the clock back 5 years, and they delivered. And as much criticism as we've thrown at PSG around how that club is run, around the culture of that football club, and for their failings, you can see the exact opposite around Real Madrid, around the culture, around what is expected of you. That if you're 34 years old and you have to run by Neymar and a couple others, that's what you do. If you're Karim Benzema and you're 34 years old, you go and you press goalkeepers in the 60th minute when the game is lost. That's what you have to do. And it speaks to why Real Madrid continue to be a force regardless of who they may have to call on.
Modric's got to be a coach's dream, Stevie.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if you can't have great players and all the other fluffy stuff, as your coach, you want people that love the game. You want somebody that just wants to go out and play. And at 36 years of age, to do what he did tells you that not only is he a great professional, but he just loves playing.
Yeah.
And I was talking about this little thing here.
Yeah, why can't you say heart? Why do you have to keep...
that's another thing that keeps... Right. That's beating in your chest.
Famously on the podcast. Yeah. What the heck's going on?
It is. It's heart. You know, you can do a lot of things with a big heart.
Yeah.
And when you've got the ability he has as well, and you put them together, you get Luka Modric.
Finally, gentlemen, what are the expectations now around Real Madrid? They should win La Liga, last 8 of the Champions League. Will this be enough for Ancelotti to see another season next year?
Yeah, I think so. Something very wrong should happen for him because they are almost for sure going to win La Liga. They can only lose it at this point. And let's see what happens now, because there is so much euphoria in Spain, in Madrid. The fans are absolutely delighted. They think they are the kings of Europe, as they prove it in the Santiago Bernabeu. But let's not forget the last wins. Yeah, they had 4 wins in a row, but quite a tricky wins. And let's not forget that this tie for 150 minutes was a PSG win. But this is all forget now with the winning effect. So we will see. I think they are, we didn't mention them as the candidates, main candidates for the Champions League win. But there's euphoria. Let's see how it goes. That is a big match 2 weeks from now, the El Clásico. Barcelona are going to be quite tired because they have to play and play everything in Istanbul. Real Madrid, let's see what they do. But yeah, I think Carlo Ancelotti is quite solid. He was quite smart in the tie against PSG. And I think he's managing quite well.
Gemma Saleh, thank you very much. Julien, we appreciate it, mate.
Thank you, guys.
We'll speak to you next
Gracias,
season.
Gracias, amigos.
A lot more of the Gamblers podcast over on the website. Be sure to check that out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, as Gemma mentioned, of course, Barcelona in Europa League action. They were held to a 0-0 draw at home at the Camp Nou. Meanwhile, on Thursday, we saw Atalanta and Bayer Leverkusen play out a 5-goal thriller. Atalanta winning by 3-2. Meanwhile, Sevilla beat West Ham 1-0. And a big win for Rangers as they defeated Red Star Belgrade by 3-0. Well, La Liga continues this weekend. Friday sees Atletico Madrid take on Cadiz. And then on Sunday, Barca take on Osasuna. And Monday, we'll see Mallorca play host to Real Madrid. I feel like it's been forever, Shaq.
Well, that's because it has, Dan.
Did you have a nice vacation, holiday?
I had a lovely vacation. I was thinking about this top 10 all the
while. Where did you go, Shaq? Anywhere nice?
I went to Trinidad and Tobago, Dan.
Do you know that place well?
I know it. Particularly well, yes.
Take us through the top 10 then.
Where do you want me to start? Real Madrid have bounced back in after that win. That's no need for an explanation there. Bayern, despite what they drew last week, but so did City. Liverpool lost to Inter. why is it
face something
like that?
Against Bayer Leverkusen.
Tell you what, you've slashed this, haven't you? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 newcomers.
Barca going to be Galatasaray.
What were we talking about?
Barcelona.
Everybody dropped. City drew. Liverpool lost to Inter. Ajax didn't play in Europe this week.
Advanced. You can't.
Yes, okay, but they advanced, but they lost to Inter. But they lost to Inter. That's
Rangers,
my only
Rangers
point.
Beat Red Star Belgrade.
Oh well, goodie for Rangers. Goodie for Rangers. I don't know if I tell you. They're not in. Rangers are not in.
Did you have a new Inter and new there?
Yeah.
Solely on the fact they defeated Liverpool.
And they're top of Serie A. Oh, second in Serie A.
Liverpool just dropped a place.
But they beat Liverpool.
They had one shot.
They beat Liverpool.
In two games.
They beat Liverpool.
They're out of the Champions League.
But they beat Liverpool.
But it's irrelevant.
Does it matter?
It's relevant because of where Liverpool are. Right. In beating somebody that high up in the table, you're in.
You were Chelsea.
Rangers beat Red Star Belgrade. Red Star Belgrade not near my top 10. Got a credit into there.
Well, it's wonderful to have you back, Shaq.
Oh, thanks, Dan.
The power rankings.
Thank you.
Just a reminder.
You have a strange way of showing it.
Well, yes, it reminds me why I normally have Thursdays off. Extra time available over on our YouTube channel. Today's extra time is just the two of you.
Is it?
Oh, intimate. Wow. Be nice.
Lovely.
That is it then. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who has been on. Stevie and Shaka will stay though late to answer your tweets on Extra Time. Welcome in then to the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for all the questions, pretty much for PSG or Real Madrid related, you feel, from the ones that were sent in today. A lot of people asking this sort of question, Stevie. How much grief have you given me since your PSG prediction?
Well, there's still more to come. I'll try to hold back, honestly. But you're certainly the first person I called.
You were, Steve. You called it just so beautifully. Yes. And the thing is, it just makes me look like such an idiot, like an arrogant idiot.
Yeah, but you say that as if that comes as a surprise.
Yeah. You say that as though you didn't do that to yourself, Dad. You did that all to yourself, all by your lonesome.
It comes as a surprise to me.
Yeah. No, because you're an arrogant idiot. Yeah, that comes as a surprise to you.
And what was your, because you were in the city, weren't you, Stevie, yesterday? What was your reaction watching this game? Were you cheering?
I was.
Take that, Thomas.
I was running up and down the bar with my arms in the air.
Thomas is getting it.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the phone calls. Much appreciated. Congratulations, you were given the freedom of Newcastle.
Yeah.
When you were away.
Yes, that's right.
This before. That's brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Very proud. He's got the freedom of Newcastle.
Freedom of the city of Newcastle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And England.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
So I think the ceremony is carded for April 30th, so I'll be going up for that.
Oh, lovely.
Yes.
Very nice.
Well, they're going to give you a key or something.
Yeah. Yes. And I can go into any building I want.
Oh, it's like the master key.
Yes,
like
that's right. Mm-hmm. Huh? That's exactly how it works. Exactly how it works.
Did I give you the freedom of air, Stevie?
That was not much anyway.
Shaka, what was Donnarumma thinking? Was he trying to be cheeky? And have you ever done something similar?
No. Never.
To which answer?
I've never done anybody who's seen me play, no, I wouldn't do that. Because right. I'm not trying to pass the ball to anybody.
You're hoofing it.
I'm hoofing it. And I don't know why you try to do that. I mean, listen, I understand. If it's nil-nil and that's how you play and you try to pass the ball out the back by invited pressure and blah, blah, blah. But you're two up. In aggregate, you're two up in the tie. You can only lose it. Just kick it in the stand. Nobody cares. No, nobody will care. Why you try to open up and make that pass, I don't know. What do you gain? I don't know.
Stevie, you're named coach and football director at PSG.
Ooh. I didn't know that either.
No. Oh.
You have absolute power.
Ooh.
What do you do to win a Champions League?
Go to the bar. To win a Champions League.
Unfortunately, they're going to have to break this team up and start again.
Mm. Well, you've got Neymar, still got 4 years left on his contract. What are you going to do with that?
Well, you can't get rid of him. Even if you wanted to, you can't get rid of them.
So how do you get the
message
best?
The same.
How do you get the best out of them?
Well, I would suggest a severe size 12 to the backside would kick things off.
Do you think so?
Well, what else can you do? You can't go. Everybody seems like they've been pandering to this guy. And what has it got them? It's got them nothing from him on the field of play, and it just brings a bad attitude.
Right.
To the club.
So you go and kick him in the backside.
So you just, you make it tough for him.
Right.
Make it hard for him.
But how difficult, that's quite difficult to someone who earns 40 million a year, isn't it?
Well, it is, but then you're hoping. Listen, for this guy to get where he was, he had to work hard, he had to have a good attitude,
yep.
Do all the right things. That is seemingly has gone somewhere. So that's what you're trying, to get back to that guy. That's the person you try to get in touch with. Not the guy who's renting nightclubs out and having parties and all that. You get back to the basics, if you can.
But I wonder if that guy was no more ceased to exist ever since he left Barcelona.
Right.
Because why else would he leave Barcelona? Honestly, where Barcelona were at the time, why else would you leave? And I just don't think that he's the roll-your-sleeves-up type of guy.
Shaka, was it a tactical mistake to leave Keylor Navas on the bench? He got all the experience and leadership playing in the Bernabeu to transmit confidence to PSG.
Listen, I think they've been making a mistake around their goalkeepers for quite some time.
Because they've been chopping and changing.
And as I've said from day one, that helps neither. That does Donnarumma no favours, it does Keylor Navas no favours, it does no one in the back for any favours. pick one and stick with it. And it's come back. It's, you know, I don't. It's ridiculous to say, well, if Keylor Navas were playing, things would be different because of his leadership. But to my point about just kicking the ball in the stands, when you're a goalkeeper and you feel that you're being judged on every single incident, and the manager Pochettino says, when you get the ball, I want you to play it out. Because you know somebody like Keylor Navas is waiting in the wings, every time you get the ball, your first thought is play it out.
Right.
If you are confident in your position, regardless of what you do, I think you have a greater freedom just to go and make that decision on your own and kick it in the stand. So I there's a lot at play here that I think has come back to cost PSG.
Stevie, we saw what a fantastic dribbler Mbappe is. However, there are players like Traoré who do it too much. Have you ever coached dribbling out of a player to make him a team player?
I wouldn't say you coach dribbling out of somebody, but I remember Clint Dempsey in his first couple of years with us at the Revs. You know, he would go past people.
Mm-hmm.
But he would go past people on the halfway line and then try and go past another one. And so he was basically ending up getting kicked every time.
Right.
Because he was a big, strong boy, and the only way he could get it off him was to foul him. And so I just sort of said, look, why don't you save that stuff for in closer to the goal? Then you can do what you want. I said, because all you're doing right now is, number one, everybody else around you isn't sure when you're going to release the ball, and two, well, if you're getting kicked every game, it's going to catch up with you.
Sure.
It's all right when you're 22, 23, mm-hmm. but when you're 27 and 8 and things start, they start catching up with you physically. So that would be the only thing, but certainly you don't discourage people from dribbling. You just got to get the balance right.
Who's the best dribbler you played with?
Barnsley.
Yeah.
See you later.
Just fun. just fun. Watching John Barnes in his palm was just
running past people. They had no idea, they were all spinning round. He was just like that.
For Shaka, who will win a Champions League title first? PSG or Newcastle?
As much as I would love to see Newcastle, you just feel PSG are better positioned right now. They have issues, but they're better positioned.
Stevie, who should be starting? Oh, this isn't a PSG or Real Madrid question. Who should be starting beside Van Dijk? Matip or Konate?
Well, I think if you're picking the team today, you've got to say Matip. He's actually had his best season since he came to Liverpool. I always thought he had a mistake in him. But it's good that now they've got choices. I mean, you could probably throw Gomez in there as well. So they've got strength at the back.
Final question, Stevie. How does it feel to be the smartest member of the ESPN FC crew?
Oh,
Jackie, you've gone from the smartest, the rocket scientist,
yeah,
to be eclipsed by...
Being as humble as I am, I would not like to rub it in.
Any more predictions for us, Stevie, that you'd like to share?
Not yet.
No?
Not yet. No, I'm saving them all. I don't
here you go.
I don't want my bubble to bust too soon.
On that note, we'll say thank you very much, gentlemen. We will be back tomorrow for more. I think Seb's here tomorrow.
Is he?
Yeah. Are you here tomorrow?
No, I'm from home tomorrow.
Oh, what are you doing, Stevie?
What day is tomorrow?
Friday.
No, I'm off.
Oh, lovely. What are you going to do?
Call Dan. Give Dan a call. Talk about PSG Real Madrid.
Make it back to New York.
I think New York wants you back. Yeah.